Today on Maine Calling, Maine's animal welfare system. If you've ever adopted a dog or cat from an animal shelter in Maine, you know about the caring people who put their heart and soul into helping animals. Maine is home to dozens of shelters and other organizations committed to healing, protecting, and finding homes for abandoned, abused, and neglected domestic animals. And not just dogs and cats, horses too. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we meet a few of those people working to help animals in need. And we'll learn about how Maine's animal welfare system works. How are shelters licensed and inspected? Where do you turn if you know about a dog, cat, or horse in need? And just how many domestic animals are in need of a home today? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Maine Farmland Trust, working this summer to purchase and protect the historic Morris Farm in Wiscasset. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org. By Welch & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, supporting Maine island communities through education, health, and community engagement. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Every year, thousands of dogs, cats, horses, and other domestic animals in Maine receive care throughout the state's animal welfare system and shelters throughout Maine. Today, we're going to learn more about them. Joining me, Peggy Kaiser, who is Advancement Director for the Maine State Society for the Protection of Animals, Rachel Fisk, Assistant State Veterinarian with the Department of Conservation, Agriculture, and Forestry, and Jess Townsend, Executive Director of Midcoast Humane Society. We invite you to join the conversation. Have you ever volunteered at one of these shelters, adopted a dog, cat, or horse? Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you. Thank you so much for joining us. And I want to shout out and say thank you to one of our listeners. Dr. Lonnie Graham is the person who suggested this show topic today, and it was a great show topic. Dr. Fisk, I'm going to start with you and ask just sort of about the general system. I'm looking at some statistics in front of me, and I see that the last survey results, 2020, throughout Maine, almost 15,000 cats adopted, almost 9,000 dogs. Some of them stray, some surrendered, some transferred. That's a lot of animals. So how does the system work? If an animal, let's say an animal control officer in a local town is called because of a stray dog or a stray cat, what is set in place? What happens next?
Yeah, so there's kind of two arms of, so animal welfare and animal control. So we have our municipal animal control officer. So every town has an ACO, and they can deal with that, immediate response needed, boots on the ground, stray cat, stray dog, and get it to a contract, the animal shelter that town contracts with. And then sort of the other arm is more of the, if there's an actual complaint about the condition or care that's being provided or lack thereof for a domestic animal, a complaint can come into a local ACO, but also the state animal welfare program has six district humane agents, so investigators spread out throughout the state that can respond to that type of complaint and actually perform an investigation to determine, what resources are needed and if there's any regulation that needs to take effect. So that's kind of the really big picture view of animal welfare in Maine.
And I'm guessing most people don't know their local, either animal control officer or the ACO who works for the state. Do most of the cases that come to you come through a local police department? Have people called their police department and then that police department contacts you?
Sometimes, yes. And some of the municipal ECOs are actually either law enforcement officers themselves or dispatched by the police department. So it really varies in every town. The state animal welfare program website does have a list of animal control officers by town. So you can go and look up and see who your ACO is. And then most town websites also provide that information. If you called the town office, they would also be able to help you get a hold of your local ACO.
Jess, Midcoast Humane Society is one of what I've learned is more than 60 shelters throughout the state. You're one of the larger shelters. How do animals come to you?
They come to us a variety of ways, including the scenario that you just gave. We get a lot of pets that are picked up by local animal control officers and brought in. 39 municipalities feed into Midcoast. So we have a pretty large catchment area. For the towns that feed in here, we also take owner relinquished animals. When people are no longer able to keep their pets, they come here from our towns. We also house for court cases. I have three going right now where for whatever reason, the animal is caught in the legal net and are awaiting the outcome of a case. Beyond that, we also do transport. So for example, I have multiple pets right now from other main shelters, including the Holton area. When our sisters in animal welfare are too full or not having their animals move through, we all talk to each other and see who has resources and who's able to help. And we move them throughout the state.
Okay, so because our listeners can't see you on Zoom like I can, they can't see that a black cat has walked into the frame and has decided he or she wants to be on the radio. What's the name of that cat, Jess?
This is Bagheera, and he is the office foster. He and his housemate Crookshanks came in 2 days ago, and Crookshanks is one of the fattest cats we've had in a really long time, and they needed a much bigger space so he could start getting some exercise and moving around. So they live in here with me. This is their space 24 hours a day.
And how many animals will you have at once? Give us a sense of the scale here. Just at your shelter, you're, again, one of more than 60 shelters in the state. How many animals are there right now? What is typical for you?
So summer is our busiest season. I have today 467 animals in care between this facility, which is in Brunswick, our shelter in Edgecombe, and our foster care program. That is a lot of animals. And as I said, it gets busier in the summer. It is baby animal season. Mother Nature is really smart. She makes sure that babies are not born into a Maine winter that they won't survive. But that does also mean in the spring, everybody goes into heat. We have kittens coming out our ears. There's way, way too many of them. Fortunately, we have a lovely foster program like Dr. Graham, who fosters for us. And most of those babies get to be off-site in someone's home until they're ready for adoption.
All right, Peg Kaiser, so nice to see you. And I want to ask you about MSSPA. I think maybe many people have driven by your facility in Windham. You can see it from, is it Route 302? People can see it from?
It's River Road. We're right across the big main correctional facility. It was across the road from us, and we're on the River Road.
And I fessed up for years. I drove by. Yeah, I drove by, and I sort of had a vague idea of what the organization did, but my vague idea was wrong. So fill me in. What is it that you do at MSSPA?
Everything that's already been said applies to what we do as well. But horses, no pun intended, it's a bit of a horse of a different color when you're dealing with horses. We don't do the quantity of numbers, certainly, that shelters that deal with dogs and cats do. But we're very much in the same situation where we are not the law enforcement arm of this at all, as Rachel explained earlier. We're at the ready to receive horses who are in need of our care. Our mission is to rescue and rehabilitate abused and neglected equines. And so horses come to us either from direct owner surrender, or they are sometimes surrendered to an ACO, an animal control officer, or occasionally they are also seized by an animal control officer. And Rachel is talking about those situations where the ACO has made a judgment or a determination that basic care is not being met, whether it's a dog or a cat or a horse. And in that case, we do then partner with the law enforcement agent to literally remove the horses from the property and trailer them here. So we, at any given point, we have between 35 and 40 horses on the farm. And a lot of people are surprised to hear that, because when they drive by, they may see six or eight. But we have 125 acres here and paddocks galore. So we generally have that many horses in various states of getting better and fully rehabilitated on the farm.
Mm. And tell me about some of the horses that come in. It's so expensive to care for a horse. And I can only imagine that you're dealing with horses that are malnourished because maybe somebody can't afford to feed them, or haven't been able to afford a farrier. So can you explain to me how horses are when they come to you, and then how you know when they're ready for adoption?
Great question. You know, they truly come to us in a variety of conditions. The ones who have been seized are in really, really dire shape. We have a horse that came into us just a few weeks ago who is so thin and emaciated, and he's really struggling to get healthier and get on the road to recovery. He's kind of an extreme example. Some of the horses that are surrendered to us aren't in the greatest shape, but they're not in that kind of condition. So the ones that come to us in the worst shape are generally those that have been seized by law enforcement. We have a measuring scale from 1 to 10, a Hennecke body condition score that our veterinarians assess when they do an intake, a 1 being really the lowest score they can get. And when they're in that shape, where you see really protruding hip bones and rib cages, you can count all the ribs. And horses need, like humans, regular teeth care and hoof care. And if they don't get that, boy, they get into trouble very quickly with really complicated and chronic health issues. So most of the horses coming to us in that shape have not had their teeth dealt with or looked at, and their feet as well. This horse I just told you about had been standing in a stall for years, was our understanding, and standing in manure. So his feet were dreadful. Rehabilitation is a long and gradual process. Our staff is extremely skilled at putting each horse on a refeeding program, an individual refeeding program for each horse that comes onto the farm. Each horse is quarantined for a month while we do blood work and make sure all of their, they've had the proper shots, they've had, you know, parasites dealt with, that kind of thing. And once they're out of quarantine and they're sort of beginning to get back on their feet, literally, we begin that process of getting weight back on them and correcting whatever possible chronic conditions they may have. When they're back to being healthy, they're comfortable, they're not lame, they're eating well, they look like they should, that's when we take them into our indoor and begin to sort of figure out. Remember, most of these horses present to us with zero medical history and zero background if they've been seized. So we bring them into our indoor arena and we begin some groundwork and get a sense of what they may know or may not know, so that we can convey that to an adopter.
Mm. So really fine work, Jess and Peg, you all are doing. Rachel, I'm thinking back about something you said, that there are 6 district humane agents in Maine in your department. Maine's a really big state. Is that enough? I can't even imagine the what a day, a week, a month looks like for one of them.
Yeah, our humane agents, they're amazing in what they do and the amount of cases that they can manage. They work so hard and they're so passionate about the work that they do. I get to work with all of them. I'm sort of their veterinary sort of technical expert, if you will. So they'll involve me, excuse me, when they have a complaint that is medical or veterinary in nature. So I'm sort of support staff for all the really hard work that they do.
Yeah, I'm looking and it says that, you know, you have somewhere between 500 and 800 complaints a year that you're responding to. There must have to be some sort of ranking or triage process to figure out how to respond and when.
Yeah, and luckily some of those complaints end up being completely unfounded. So, you know, someone calls and makes a complaint and the humane agent gets out there and, you know, discovers that, you know, thankfully for everybody, most including the animal, that it's really just a neighborly dispute, or, you know, something like they don't think that the shelter is appropriate, and they get out there and the, you know, dilapidated doghouse that they see on the front lawn has nothing to do with the like beautiful situation that's going on in the backyard that they just can't see from the road. So sometimes the complaint is unfounded. But our humane agents, like I said, they work really hard, and they do a really good job also at sort of identifying the local and regional resources that they have in their area. And that certainly includes our licensed shelter. So we don't have a state facility that's a shelter here in Maine. And so we really lean heavily from time to time on our Maine licensed shelters.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about the licensing process and all that in just a little bit, but we are going to take a break. We're talking about animal welfare in Maine. What do you want to know? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, or post a comment on Facebook or Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today, we're talking about the animal welfare system in our state. With me, Dr. Rachel Fisk. She's Maine's assistant state veterinarian. Jess Townsend is executive director of Midcoast Humane Society. And Peg Kaiser is advancement director at the Maine State Society for the Protection of Animals, Maine's Horse Rescue. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or call 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Norma Milton from Halfway Home Pet Rescue in Caribou. Norma, thank you so much for calling in, and tell me about the work that you do.
I'm very happy to be able to speak with you, Jennifer. We have made such great progress in Aroostook County. And my heart is so full when I try to even think about the difference between 10 years ago even and now what we're doing. I think within the realm of proof that we can give to the public is, does spay and neuter work? Yes. You can either spay an animal before he starts breeding, which is the best time to do it, or you can wait and euthanize that same animal 4 or 5 months down the line when he's turned into a shelter and there's not enough room, or he's contracted a disease that means that it is going to be contagious to the rest of the population. So the spay and neuter, people used to push it, but unless you had a nice, healthy checkbook, it wasn't going to happen. I mean, the kids needed shoes first. And we all understand that. However, when you come down to the fact that I can say many, many years ago, I volunteered at a shelter that would have up to 150 cats, yet every Tuesday afternoon was euthanasia day. I had to stop my volunteering because I couldn't live with that. Now what we do at Halfway Home Pet Rescue, which is a totally all-volunteer group, we have 6 to 9 free spay-neuter clinics per year, and we bring a mobile vet from downstate up into Aroostook County for 3-day stays, and each stay, each clinic, she does approximately 125 cats in the area. Low income, mid income, I don't care what your income is, because I don't know what your personal life involves. Maybe you have a medical situation in your family that even though you make a little higher income, it also costs you more for your daily life.
Norma, that's just so wonderful to hear about the work you're doing up there and the spay-neuter clinic so many times a year serving Aroostook County. Is that the only thing you do, or is there also an adoption program, correct?
Yes, there's a lot of things that we do. It's basically, about 4 or 5 years ago, I started research and how the problems of cat overpopulation was changing within the county. which probably would be pretty fair to say with every county in Maine. We have very cold winters. Animals can't survive out in the cold. But we also, we go out and rescue. We go out and we trap feral cats. We completely do all their medical and place them in good barn homes where we have a working relationship with the farmer. So if a cat gets ill, we retrap it and get it the medical care it needs and bring it back to its home farm. The other thing we do is we have a lot of cats that are surrendered because of the economy the last few years. And that's the big heartache. The COVID pandemic sent us animals who people were going into the nursing home. They were dying of COVID in hospitals. It seemed like so many of our animals came from that. Now what we're seeing is economy-related issues. It gets to the point you have to choose whether you go to the dentist with your 10-year-old or whether or not you get your cat to the vet to get the shots.
Norma, before I say goodbye to you, I want to read to you a Facebook comment because I think that you might have an answer. Marianne has written in and said, some of my neighbors here in the town of Washington are trying to get a handle on the ever-growing cat population. We are attempting to get them spayed or neutered and get help with trapping. Our local shelters are full. Any suggestions? What would you say to Marianne about starting a program like yours or expanding a program like yours in her area?
Start small. Don't look at the big idea. Be satisfied to start small, and it will build and build and build. It's like the field of dreams.
Well, Norma, thank you so much.
If you build it, they will come.
Thank you. The cats will come. Thank you so much for calling in. Norma Milton calling from Halfway Home Pet Rescue in Caribou. We'll go to Brian, who's calling from Biddeford. Hi, Brian. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Quick question. In New York County area, it piqued my interest about possibly looking at maybe adopting a horse. Maybe I'm no farmer or anything like that. I'm just your average Joe. Where can one start looking, and how expensive would that be on the average?
Peg, what can you tell Brian?
Great question. I'll try to answer it as best I can. When we are ready to adopt a horse, all of our adoptable horses are on our website, which is mssspa.org, and you can click on the adopt tab and see who's available. That being said, horses are not inexpensive. They're actually very expensive. It puts us in a different category than dogs and cats in terms of care. You know, I'm going to guess, and I'm not the person to answer this, but I'd say upwards of $3,000 a year minimum. And that's if you're keeping the horse in your backyard, that's one thing. If you're boarding the horse, that number goes up dramatically if you're paying to board the horse. Medications for horses are expensive. Feed is expensive. So we really want folks to go into this process wide-eyed. If you are interested in a particular horse that we have available for adoption, there is an application form on our website, and that really starts the process. You tell us what you're looking for. We are very, very thorough in our adoption process. We don't want these horses to go to homes where it's not going to be a good match. We want you to get the horse that is suited to your needs, whether it's somebody you're going to ride or trail ride, or somebody that's going to be a companion horse for maybe a horse that you already have in your backyard. So it's a very gradual process. We have the adopter meet the horse and see how that goes. We go to visit where the horse will be kept. We want to make sure fencing is good, paddocks are good, water is clean. You know, all those things are very vitally important. And then if it all works, the horse goes home to the new adopter. We stay on the contract with the adopter and we visit those horses. Every horse that we've adopted, we visit every year to keep track of them, make sure they're doing okay. We do upwards of 100 post-adoption site visits a year.
Well, wonderful. And Brian and Peggy, you'll be happy to know that someone who has done that process is calling in. Janet McIver adopted a horse from MSSPA. Thanks so much for calling in, Janet. I understand you adopted a beautiful horse named Nellie. Tell us about Nellie, her situation, and how did you decide to adopt her?
Hi, thank you for having me. So actually, the first time I saw Nellie was on my Facebook feed through Horses with Hope. And Nellie started at the MSSPA and then went to Horses with Hope for training and then adoption. And she is a Palomino, and I am a sucker for a Palomino. And I saw her, and I just thought she was so beautiful that I decided to inquire about her. I do a program through the Travis Mills Foundation for first responders and veterans with PTSD, and I was hoping that she would be a good match for the program.
And is she?
And she is.
She certainly is. So,
you know, I was going to say, Janet is doing such amazing work with Nellie, and Nellie is a story that brings us all such joy, because Nellie was tied to a post with an 8-foot rope for over a year. Every time I say this, I get emotional. And she came to the MSSPA completely shut down and just wanted nothing to do with people or anybody. And through patient training, she went to our partner, Horses with Hope is a private rescue up in Hope, Maine, where they bring in horses from rescues around New England. They do intensive training with them. And that's, Janet, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I'm so proud of the work that you're doing. And Janet adopted her from Horses with Hope, and they're just, it's such a success story. Nellie is inspiring people who are putting their lives back together.
Janet, I have to ask you for your advice for anyone who's listening and thinking about following in your footsteps and adopting a horse.
Well, Nellie's requires a lot of care and just horse knowledge. I mean, on the outside, sometimes she can just seem like this really pretty horse that's really quiet. But at times on the inside, she has separation anxiety and concerns of being alone and being abandoned. So it's important that whoever is handling her knows her backstory and understands the clear boundaries that she needs. And when I first got her, I did experience her having one of her, I guess we could call it an anxiety attack, where she can be kind of difficult to handle. And if you don't have the experience, it can be a little unsafe. And I made a little change in her daily life, and just kept being really consistent. And she's been perfect. I've had her since last October, and she has really been a pleasure to be around. So I am aware of that. So my suggestion for anybody adopting a horse should be somebody that has had probably some years of experience.
Janet, thank you so much for calling in, and good luck with you and Nellie. I'm envious. I want to meet Nellie. So thank you so much for calling in. I'm going to go to an email here that says, let's see here. Oh, there it is. It's an email from Jenny. It is a source of pride that most, if not all, Maine shelters are no-kill. Our state has such a great track record for spaying and neutering, which tremendously helps limit the stray dog population. That said, it now seems you need to be middle class or higher to be able to afford a fur friend. Besides the higher adoption fees, vet fees are very high, and the number of rentals that allow animals is very low. I understand the fees to adopt pay for the animal's care, but they're still out of reach for many potential adopters. I also see a lot of people giving up their pets due to medical issues, and I find it sad that an animal who may be well-loved and cared for must be given away. So a couple questions here. One, maybe shelters could reunite the pets with their human and have them pay a small monthly fee to reimburse for care. Thank you to all the staff and volunteers who make these places safe for our animals. So, Jess, there's a lot in there from Jenny. First, I want to address the euthanasia issue. Is that true? Is your shelter or most in Maine no-kill shelters?
That was such a meaty email. I'm so excited to answer all of that. So the entire state of Maine qualifies. So the no-kill movement defines no-kill as 90% or more of the pets that enter shelters are adopted out, or they leave through some sort of front door kind of way. They return to owners, go to a rescue, et cetera. Maine, last I checked, Rachel can correct me if I'm wrong on my stats, but I believe that our state is hanging out at about 95%. Most of us don't use the phrase no kill because of the dynamics that that sets up for other shelters in other parts of the country who are not as lucky as we are. One of the things that I brought up earlier is kind of our short breeding season, which is actually really helpful when you're looking at a statewide population. And for a state like Texas or Florida, where they don't have that advantage, it's a lot harder because one cat can make up to 36 kittens in a year if she goes into heat every cycle. So that's a thing to keep in mind. What we talk about is life-saving. And the other thing to kind of keep in mind is that a lot of folks that I know through animal welfare throughout New England, Maine included, are maintaining wait lists to bring animals in, which is absolutely a choice that a lot of people make. But what it means is that people aren't necessarily getting their pet in when they want to. And if you're not following up with resources and helping people rehome on their own, and if you're not addressing the issues that folks are having, that can actually be a real burden for owners. And on the owner admission end, what we saw the month of June, I have never seen so many owner surrendered animals since I got to Midcoast 3 years ago in 1 month. Oh. And it wasn't by a little bit. It was by year over year, 50 more animals in 1 month than we had seen in any other single month in 3 years.
Is there a trend? Was there a reason for many of them?
I think that kind of taking it together, I put owner admissions into buckets. There's the I can't afford bucket, the medical bucket, and the housing bucket. And they all kind of overlap, but you can sort of find themes. A lot of it did have to do with housing. A lot of folks were moving and not able to take their pets with them. They couldn't find pet-friendly housing. A lot of folks weren't able to afford medical care for their animals or simply their upkeep. And most shelters throughout Maine do what we can to help. And the resources are different depending on what region that shelter is in and what sort of support they get from their community. But we maintain a pet food pantry. We also support pet food pantries at 6 other area pantries that do human food that are also willing to distribute pet food. We have a public assistance program for one-time medical costs because as the email rightly pointed out, we don't actually want your pet if they are well-loved and otherwise well-cared for. I don't actually want your dog. If we can help pay for him to get the quills pulled out of his mouth, and if you can keep him from the wrong end of a porcupine again, I would rather just do that and return him. So we have a program for that. But the issue of who cares for chronic illness, for example, diabetes, hyperthyroid, these things that are chronic and continuous issues that have constant medical care, I don't know any shelters who are resourced well enough to do that for their entire community. So you combine all of that and you end up with a month like we had in June when so many animals came in. But the other interesting thing about it, if we go back to what Norma was talking about, which was spay neuter, which previously, you know, pre-COVID, I would have said Maine had that on autopilot. We had that on lockdown. We were fine. We didn't need to talk about it anymore. What I learned from COVID is that you're no more than 1 or 2 bad years away from your population rebounding. That goes back to that one cat, 36 kittens in a year thing. We're managing 6 different overpopulation scenarios right now from cats that have cat populations that have gotten out of control. And what's really funny is when you kind of pull apart our data, I was still seeing newborns in January, which we shouldn't. As I explained, Mother Nature is not making babies out in the main winter. So I pulled our data apart and like, why do I have newborns in January? They were being born in people's homes. Mm-hmm. So we're not on autopilot for spay neuter. We do still need to be doing it. But the confounding factor for that is there's not enough veterinarians in Maine. Dr. Fisk is a unicorn. You can go hunting for them, but they're not necessarily here. And even if they are, shelters can't necessarily afford to hire them, much less subsidize the cost of getting those animals spayed and neutered. So it's a very complex, very layered problem. And it is, as Norma also pointed out, less expensive to spay and neuter the animal now than deal with all 6 of her babies later. But somehow you still have to find the money for that upfront cost and for the veterinarian with the skill set to do it. And what we're seeing this summer is a lot of folks who have just too many animals. Their pets have been reproducing for a bit. We just helped a gentleman who had 20 cats that started as two. And that's not an uncommon story.
Wow. So many questions coming in, so many calls coming in, but I have to take another break. We are talking about animal welfare in Maine. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. We're finding out about how the animal welfare system works in Maine and about so many shelters and organizations helping animals, domestic animals, pets, horses. My guest, Jess Townsend with Midcoast Humane Society, Peggy Kaiser with MSSPA, and Rachel Fisk, Assistant State Veterinarian. If you're quick, we've got lots of calls coming in. You might be able to join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. I want to go to a question here from Linda, an email. She writes, I'd like to know if your guests believe the laws for animal cruelty could be stronger. For example, that horse you mentioned was standing in a stall for years. A case in Rockland recently, a young man threw a kitten against a floor and wall. No punishment came about there. What can we do, speak to, change, and strengthen these laws? Rachel.
So actually our laws here in Maine, according to national animal advocacy groups, are very strong. We typically rank in the top three for animal cruelty laws nationwide on an annual audit. And so I think the laws are there. Certainly no law will encompass or cover every single situation. But I think some of it comes down to we can only respond to complaints that we receive. And so, for instance, if no one sees the horse standing in the stall or no one is able to, for whatever reason, make a complaint to someone. And I should note that all the complaints that come into the state's animal welfare program are legally considered anonymous. I will say, as one of the humans who does go and respond to these complaints, sometimes the person who's accused of this tries to guess. And I will also say that sometimes they're spot on at who they think made a complaint against them, and sometimes they are wildly inaccurate. But you can make an anonymous complaint either to your town's animal control officer or to the state animal welfare program. But I guess I would counter the assumption that our laws aren't good. I think they're pretty strong. Could they be better? Always. But we work with our legislators to help make them better.
Jess.
Rachel, can you talk about the prosecution, though? Because I think that helps answer to that constituent's question. Because just because the law is there doesn't mean that it's always enforced in the way that people would like it to be.
Yep, that's a great point, Jess. So once the animal control officer or district humane agent that works for the state animal welfare program completes their part of the investigation, we rely on our county district attorney's offices. So those prosecutors who, as you can likely imagine, they cover all different types of crimes and prosecute all sorts of crimes. So we rely on them to take the next step and move a case through the legal system. We're there as technical experts and certainly can provide testimony if it comes to a hearing or a trial. But sometimes we don't get the outcome that we want either, because the legal system is what it is. And sometimes we need to make a deal, as it were, or sometimes even though we think we've brought a really strong case, the prosecutor, who's the attorney, I'm just a veterinarian, not an attorney. Sometimes the attorney in the case really finds enough holes in it that they don't find that they can truly move forward with a case and getting a conviction, which is what some people may want.
We'll go to Lonnie, who's calling in from Freeport. Hi, Lonnie.
Hi, Jennifer. I'm going to be quick, I hope. First, I just want to say that these folks are heroic in what they do. They don't give themselves enough of a pat on the back. I've worked with Midcoast for the last year volunteering, and it's very satisfying to volunteer, and they depend on it. So I really would urge all your listeners to think about helping out at some of these shelters, walking dogs, preparing food, just sitting sometimes with animals. It can mean a lot, and I'm sure Jess would be happy to go into the numbers of people that they have. It's a great shelter. The second thing I'd like to say quickly is I'd like to mention a group known as Maine Friends of Animals, because they're kind of the legislative arm of animal protection. So the folks that you have on your show right now are folks that are taking care of those who are with us, but they don't usually work in the legislature. But Maine Friends of Animals is the reason that Maine has such a good reputation nationwide. And we need to keep at it because there's plenty more to do. So I'll just stop there and really thank you for having this show, because these animals are so needing care and they're innocent, and it's great to be able to help them out.
Well, Lonnie, thank you so much for suggesting it. When you were talking about the need for volunteers, both Peg and Jess nodded and nodded and nodded. I'll just really quickly ask you all, because there's so many questions. Jess, Peg, how many volunteers do you all have?
So we could not do what we do without our volunteers. We have over 180 volunteers who show up every day of the year, Christmas, Thanksgiving, you name it. Clean stalls, sweep the barn, scrub water buckets. Do all kinds of work around the farm, and it enables our very small staff to really focus on the horses, which the volunteers help with as well. So we are deeply grateful to our volunteer program. Go to our website if you're interested in spending some time with the horses. This is a great place to do it, and you can learn how to volunteer right through the website.
Jess?
We have over 200 volunteers, and they do everything for us from what Peg just pointed out, which is the daily care. And it's not glamorous, you guys. It is not sexy work. It is dirty. It is smelly. But there's something so satisfying about leaving behind you a lovely, clean habitat. We have folks who do nothing but do laundry for us. We go through almost 600 pounds of laundry a day. And our laundry is done almost entirely by volunteers. And that group is almost entirely retired folks. Maybe you're not able to keep up with the rigors of cleaning anymore. That's okay. I have laundry that needs doing. We have administrative volunteers. We have event volunteers. We have volunteers that absolutely love small animals. We have one person who shows up 3 times a week to clean the rabbits, guinea pigs, rats, you know, the non-dog cat section. But it really is something for almost everybody.
That's true.
Lonnie, thank you so much for calling in and for suggesting this program. We're going to go up to Bath and Frederick. Hi, Frederick. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Hi. I'm folding my shirt. So I wasn't prepared, but now I am. She's a young family member. Well, she's 40, and her husband would be loath to think that I'm calling. Maybe she'll hear this later on your 8 o'clock broadcast. Can you folks talk about what it takes to start a small startup? My stepdaughter's got years of experience of fostering animals, and she
Frederick,
loves
Frederick, you
them.
Mean starting a shelter?
Yeah, a small, some kind of facility that she would run on her own. Is it any kind of profitable enterprise, and what would it take?
All right, Rachel.
So I'll start and then probably pass it off to Jess. So first of all brick and mortar shelters, rescue organizations, and sanctuaries are required by law in Maine to be licensed with the state animal welfare program. So you have to get a license. Most of them, I believe, get their nonprofit status as well, so they are able to fundraise. And then you know, certainly developing your niche. I actually do talk to potential animal rescues on a pretty regular basis. They call to GAB regulation that are required here in Maine. And one of the first things that I often do is ask them to look around at the licensed shelters and rescue organizations that already exist in Maine and see if one of them aligns with what they're trying to do. And maybe starting at a licensed facility that's currently licensed so they can kind of learn the ropes first. But I'll pass it to Jess and see if she has any other suggestions.
We spend money, we don't make it. That's my short answer. The operations end of sheltering spends money, we don't make it. We lose money on every single animal we adopt out. The previous email that had brought up adoption fees, even with our adoption fees, we lose money on every adoption. People will not pay us in adoption fees what we spend on care. And the kind of topsy-turvy part of that is the more we spend on them, the less likely somebody is to give a higher adoption fee. So for example, an elderly pet is going to cost more than a kitten to get adopted, just to get them medically ready to go to a new home. So I would ask anybody who's starting and really wants their own group versus what Rachel brought up, which is aligning with somebody who already exists, I would ask them to really examine, what are you hoping to do and how are you going to get support? All fundraise. PEG fundraises, I fundraise. Rachel's not allowed to fundraise. It's part of being with the state, but I bet y'all if you could.
It's an important point. You know, It's a really important point. I think a lot of people are so well-intentioned and mean well and think, oh my gosh, I want to start a rescue. And our rescue is a private nonprofit. We are not aligned with the state. So our budget is met every year through fundraising, bequests, donations, and grants. And events that we hold as well here at the farm. That is what I do full time. I mean, it is a full time job to meet our budget. And I think the best of intentions are often met with defeat, because horses certainly are an expensive animal, and I know dogs and cats and everybody else's as well. But it is a big undertaking, and if you want to do it right, that's a big piece of it to consider.
Frederick, I really appreciate your question. And Peg, you just answered an email from James, wanted to know how you meet your expenses. And since the name, your name has the word state in it, do you receive Correct. State funds? And the answer to that is no.
Our name is 150 years old. And so we do often explain that we are not an agency of the state. We receive no funding from the state at all. We raise all of our own funds on our own.
So Peg, we're tight on time, but I know you've got, speaking of that, an exciting fundraiser going on right now.
And oh, so really, bless your heart, Jennifer. Tell us about us. We have a big event coming up on Sunday, September 8th, Focus on the Farm. I've invited 25 photographers to visit the farm over the course of the last year to photograph the work that happens here. They've all donated exquisite images. Those images will be available at our event through a silent auction. Tickets are $50 per person. If you go to our website, msspa.org, we hope you'll buy a ticket, support the horses. The proceeds from this event all go to the horses.
And
we
the
hope
Portland Press Herald did a beautiful article on it, which I will put on our Facebook post. Yeah, we're going to go to Camille calling in Parham. Camille, if you could be quick, that'd be great.
Yes, I'm just calling. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to know what's happening with the Help Fix Me program from the state, because I live in northern Aroostook County. And
sure, Rachel, the Help Fix Me program, is that something that you want to talk about quickly?
Sure. So the Help Fix Me program is currently in kind of a big transition secondary to a legislative mandate. So a new statute that was passed not in just this last legislative session, but the one before. Basically the running of the program is going to be outsourced to a third party. So we're in the middle of rulemaking to get that done. Certainly, you know, in transition, we're releasing vouchers for low-cost spay neuter as we have funds available, both to individual people and to pop-up spay neuter clinics that occur throughout the state.
Thank you. Thank you, Camille, for the question. I'm going to try to squeeze in just one more caller, Bob and Standish. If you could be super quick, that'd be great.
Yes, all the work that the people do to care for our pets is wonderful, and we love them. But just remember that sometimes there are pet owners that have loved their and cared for their pets very lovingly for many years, and sometimes they get older, have economic difficulties, disability, and become unable to care for themselves. And of course, the pet may suffer. So also look after other people.
That's right. And Bob, you know what? All of our guests are nodding as you talk. They all obviously have worked with people who love their pets very much and now can no longer care for them. Thank you all for joining us today. Peggy Kaiser, Advancement Director for the Maine State Society for the Protection of Animals. Rachel Fisk, Assistant Maine State Veterinarian. And Jess Townsend, Executive Director of Midcoast Humane Society. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy, along with Chris Bridges. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.